It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We'll be talking about not one, not two, but three Microsoft events coming up in the next couple of weeks. And we expect some interesting surprises. Also, what happened after Bill Belichick threw that Surface Pro at the Patriots game? It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 488, recorded Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. Don't be a Goonie booster. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Tracker. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. Visit thetracker.com right now. Use the promo code Windows for 30% off your entire order. And by Sonic, TWiT's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit Sonic, SONIC.com/TWiT to sign up for service and receive your first month free. And by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it free at Igloosoftware.com/TWiT or sign up for a live demo and see it in action for yourself. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And here they are, ladies and gentlemen, the stars of our show, the lovely and talented Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com. He's on the left, on the right, not politically, just in my monitor.
In the red trunks.
In the red trunks, weighing in at 122 pounds, Mary Jo Foley of AllAboutMicrosoft.com. Between the two of them, Paul and Mary Jo, really, there's nothing that gets by them. And this is the show where we talk about everything that's going on. Hello. You're going to be busy in the next few weeks, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Three events?
Three.
Is that possible? I know the 26th.
4 weeks kind of thing.
There's the hardware event on the 26th, right?
Right. And it's next Wednesday.
You're going to Amsterdam?
Is that one of them? We have a lot before that.
Oh, really? Well, what else? What else is happening?
We just found out yesterday there's another New York event for Microsoft on November 2nd, which is an Office event. And
do they still do Microsoft Office? They still make that, right?
Yeah, they still sell a lot of it.
It seems like you could probably rest on your laurels at this point.
Sure.
Yeah, right?
No. It does, but they are not. They continue to add new products to the suite, and we think maybe at this event they'll be showing some of what's next for Office.
Enterprise, probably enterprise stuff, right?
Probably, yeah.
Because that seems like if you're going to expand Office, you can do Sway, and Sway's nice. Mm. But really, the sweet spot has got to be collaboration. They just acquired LinkedIn. Facebook's doing Facebook at Work. Maybe some sort of unified platform, Skype, Yammer, SharePoint, all in one.
Yep. Am I getting warm?
Am I getting warm, you think?
Yeah. I mean, maybe we've been speculating maybe we'll see Skype Teams, which is what Microsoft's preparing to take on Slack. That could be on November 2nd.
Oh. What makes, everybody loves Slack.
I know.
And I've used Slack. And you are no Slack. No.
I was going to say. Yeah, Skype, I'm sorry, but you're no Slack.
You're no Slack. Frankly, I don't know what the joy and thrill of Slack is, and maybe I'm missing something. It's a nice messaging platform with integrations into, 100 different tools, the kind of tools that web teams and programming teams use. It isn't what I would call a complete platform by any means. I mean, it's not SharePoint.
Nope.
So what is it with Slack? Why does it get all that attention?
I think people like that it isn't SharePoint, right? People like that it's a dedicated thing that's for one purpose, which is collaborating with your teams. It's fairly simple. I tried it out right before Build. We a bunch of us built a Slack group for Build together, and I can see why people like it, but it also is very distracting to me.
Well, the problem is it's email now, right? It's as bad as email. It was good at first because you don't have all the tools email has.
Yeah, and also you can stop paying attention to, you know, a thread or a conversation, but then when you come back, there all these things have happened. It's kind of like Twitter DMs, except it's less manageable to me. Maybe I'm just too old to feel the appeal.
Maybe you hit something there with the simplicity thing, right? Go ahead, Paul.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's more of a mobile generation thing. Yeah. You know, SharePoint is kind of old school Microsoft. It's complex. It's hairy. It's got a lot of different stuff going on. You know, I think Slack is just the new way of doing things. And I think it's for the ADD generation.
Somebody, Omega Project said, actually, it's not SharePoint. It's a great sell line.
It is.
It really is.
Slack, it's not SharePoint.
I'm not saying that SharePoint people are like broken inside or anything, but I sort of am saying that. I mean, it's like I said, it's old Microsoft.
I've used Slack and I've used HipChat and I've used Yammer and I've used Facebook's entry. Although Facebook at work is going to be an interesting, even Facebook at work, which is much more complete than just a messaging platform. It says we're competing with Slack, or at least that's what the press's take on it was, right? Slack seems to be the thing to beat for some reason.
Slack is the industry darling, and I'm not sure it has the numbers or the capabilities to justify that, but it just kind of is.
I mean, there were rumors Microsoft was going to buy Slack not that long ago for, I think, $8
billion? Yeah, $8 billion was what I heard.
And why didn't they?
Because Nokia. Gates, Nokia. That's a good one-word answer. Gates and Nadella both, if you believe the rumors, said, "You know what? We have this thing called Skype, use Skype and kind of work with the technology inside of Skype to build the same capability that they have with Slack. So why should we buy them?"
The operative word is "could." They never did, but they could. You know, one thing somebody's in the chat room saying is one of the reasons people use Slack and HipChat is because strong Linux support as well as Mac and PC. And that's something Skype is just terrible on Linux. It's terrible.
Well, they're trying to improve that.
They're doing the WebRTC wrapper now, which is their kind of alpha Skype for Linux. But it still doesn't do video.
They added it this week, video.
Oh, did they? Oh, it was broken for group chat. Then the WebRTC thing fixed that. Okay, so now they have video. All right.
Yeah.
Ironically, using a technology pioneered by Google, but...
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. So So what's your sense? Is it going to be a Skype announcement?
The invitations we got, it just plays up the idea of team collaboration. That's kind of the theme of the invitation. It said, hey, we want to show you what's next for team collaboration. And Nadella's going to be there. Kirk Konigsberg is going to be there, who heads up Office right now. I would guess they might even show some glimpses of what's coming on the business side for maybe the back-end servers, like what's coming with Exchange and SharePoint next, since those products right now, they've come out in the past year with the newest versions of those products. So it might be time to kind of give people a little glimpse as to what's next. You know, just like what you said, because everybody's coming out with their products. You got Facebook for Work. You've got that G Suite now from Google. And I think Microsoft wants to say, hey, don't forget, we're the ones who kind of invented all this. And we're not stopping. We're not resting on our laurels. Sure. And we have some stuff to show you. That's my guess, what it'll be on November
2nd. It's a competitive space, isn't it? It's very interesting.
It is. Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking a little about Facebook for Work when they announced it earlier and this weekend. It was pitched as a competitor to Slack, which is wild. I mean, the thing that Facebook's doing, which is interesting, it's free to nonprofits, and I think that. But I can't see it like a. I don't know. Would a big company move to Facebook for Work?
I know. The problem with Facebook for Work is it's Facebook, right?
Right.
A lot of companies, when they hear Facebook, they're like, "Oh, nope, not for work." So their brand hurts them, I would say, in the business space.
I think so.
Microsoft's, of course, is golden.
Right.
Yeah. This seems like a natural. In fact, yeah. I would say it's a case of Microsoft having fumbled what would have been a natural place for them to live, right?
Yeah. In terms of?
Well, they let Slack and right. and everybody else. Yeah. And they acquired Yammer specifically to kind of be in that space, right? And that's, mm-hmm. I'm sure, what they were thinking with Skype. And they couldn't figure it out, I guess.
It's going to be interesting how Yammer fits or doesn't fit in with what they do here, because they're continuing to add new features and functionality to Yammer. And I've heard some people who've seen Skype Teams, which is the Slack competitor, saying it almost is like Yammer meets Skype. Like right. that's what it looks like to them, and that's how it feels. So maybe they did do that. Maybe they took some of the stuff out of Yammer that made more sense about collaborating and teamwork and put that into Skype for Skype Teams. I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't run Skype Teams. Have you, Paul? Have you actually tried it? No. People have.
Look back
people have
on
access.
The...
So.
I don't know. You know, our sponsor is Atlassian, and we use all the Atlassian tools. Not actually, we used them before the sponsorship, actually. And I think we had Slack for a while as a sponsor, come to think of it. And I've used both in work situations. Mm-hmm. We continue to use HipChat, which is Atlassian's product. Mm-hmm. They're nice. The real problem is messaging is great until everybody starts using it, and then it's as bad as email without any of the filtering that you had with email or the tools you had with email.
Sure.
And it's an attention drag. I mean, it just sucks the attention out of you.
It depends. I really think it's a little oversimplistic to say this, but a lot of this is about age. Like my nieces who are in their 20s, they never use email. If I email them, they never answer me. You know?
Right.
They're
By the way,
that's
true.
You emailed us?
So, you know, as you guys were.
I think you get a look at it.
Sorry.
Do your kids, Paul?
Kids? Sorry? No, they're too young to use Slack.
No, I mean, but do they ever use email?
No.
Oh, email. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. My kids do, but they're older, 22 and 24. But it's funny, the 24-year-old's more likely to use messaging, and the 22-year-old's much more likely, email, and the 22-year-old's much more likely to use messaging. And both of them probably prefer messaging over phone calls. So the hierarchy, I think you're right. I mean, messaging is number one with anybody under 21, for sure, right?
Yeah.
But
you know, the other thing
that's because they're not doing any work.
Right. No, it's because they work differently.
Well,
right?
But they're not actually in the workforce.
Some of them aren't. Like my nieces are. Yeah, they are.
And at their work, I think it's a big mistake to take your workplace and cater to millennials. I think that's that's a recipe for disaster.
I think that's what a lot of companies are doing right now.
These millennials are already entitled and annoying.
I also think it's a futures thing, right? Like, you know, I'm speaking for myself here. We're kind of at the end of our work lives. I mean, I still have a lot of my work life left, but all these people
literally
are just coming
today.
Into the work. today is my last day. I didn't want to
tell
you.
You're witnessing the meltdown.
We all quit. Goodbye. No, but we're closer to the end than we are to the beginning. How about
that? We are.
Yeah.
Right. And so they're trying, companies like Microsoft and other companies are saying, hey, we're going to be hiring a lot of people who are younger. This is what they're used to. They're used to messaging. They don't really like email. They don't want to use email.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce Snapchat for Work.
Yeah.
Yep.
The new way of getting things done. I feel like this is just these are all just ADD.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and catering to this.
We're accommodating our lessening attention span.
Right.
And not just accommodating, but embracing them, you know.
Right.
And I worry about that kind of stuff in the same way that everyone worries about the next generation. But you have to kind of wonder with Skype, if Microsoft hasn't had that same missed opportunity that they had with mobile. You know, they've had this incredible asset sitting here, not working for years. And all around them, these smaller, faster companies have been creating messaging solutions, several of which have a billion users. And they owned this space. Like, this should have been theirs.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. They blew it. There's no reason Slack and all these other platforms should exist. Microsoft should just dominate.
Mm-hmm. Especially with businesses. You know,
well,
and I think this is where they're not, it's, you know, we talk a lot about Microsoft is it's kind of unfair to categorize the entire company as a single entity because, you know, there's it's so big and so diverse and all this stuff. But I sometimes worry that their Apple fixation, perhaps for several years, and their desire to, you know, half-ass their way into consumer space has gotten in the way of their real aim and has kind of impacted their ability to supply enterprise with the things that they need. You know, when you give openings to these other solutions, that's a one-way street. I mean, once they go down that road, they're not coming back.
Well, this is the problem in general, right? There's this once you settle on something, you don't want to change every 6 weeks or every year even.
No.
So once you settle on something, I don't know. Maybe work has changed, but when I arrived wet behind the ears at the Ziff Davis offices, and they said, you're going to learn Lotus Notes and you're going to like it. And I never liked it, right? We all wanted to use, didn't we all want to use real email, normal email?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But we had to use Lotus Notes.
Half of what they told you was true. You learn Lotus Notes.
You'll never like it.
Yeah.
Would it have been better if they had used email? I think probably, you know, not because they didn't have the controls that they needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that Notes was very good.
No.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings.
Technology stinks. Why are we doing this?
Well, you know, and we actually talk about this here because we use HipChat. Not, you know, it was kind of ended up being the default. So, and everybody uses it and we all like it and we all know it now. And along come new technologies every week, it seems like. And I want to, you know, I'm looking at this and I say, oh, let's do this now. This is great. This has more features, more of what we need. This will help us. And everybody says, yeah, no, we got HipChat. I don't want to, you know, there's resistance once you learn it.
Yeah.
So the problem is millennials are going to be onto something new in 2 years, aren't they?
You could have finished that sentence earlier. The problem is millennials.
Well, I'm just saying, if you start, it's the tail wagging the dog. If you start catering to a fickle young workforce that really, frankly, doesn't have a lot of experience in the workplace –
you have to, right? They have expectations. They grew up in a different world than we did, and businesses want to attract these guys, of course.
I fear
for the future.
It's an endless cycle. We've seen this cycle all along. I mean, if I think about programming teams and so forth, there's a new fad. You know, there was design patterns and there's agile and there's all these new fads and new languages, and you can't get away from that if you're a technology driven workplace.
Leo, this object oriented programming thing is not going to last.
Future. That's actually kind of what's starting to happen is people are moving away from that, saying, yeah, that was a promise that didn't live up to its potential. Now we're back to functional programming.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
All right. I like my programming languages all caps.
Yeah.
Give me tabs and parentheses.
So, so there's the Microsoft Office team collaboration event. That's November 2nd, and that's possibly Skype Teams. November 26th is the hardware event.
October
26th. The first. Yeah. By the way, the latest rumor is Apple's going to do its event the day after that.
Yep. I had heard, you know what's crazy? I had heard that, and me of all people hearing an Apple rumor, but the reason I heard it was Microsoft is trying to wedge their events in and not overlap with any other companies, right? So I think they've been trying to figure out when is Apple going to do this announcement so that we can announce, because the minute that rumor came out about October 27th, that's when we get the invitations to November 2nd.
Oh, that's really, yeah, you don't want to, the last thing, even a company as big as Microsoft really doesn't want to try to share the news cycle with Apple.
Not with Apple.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. Jeez, that's sad. All right. But that's not all. But wait, there's more.
There's more. Right. And then November 16th, there's the Connect conference, which is Microsoft's developer event that this will be their third one they've had in New York, and the third one total. So that's usually an event where they talk up some of the programming technologies they have in the works. They talk a lot about things like VS Code, what else do they talk about? They're going to talk about Xamarin, I bet, and .NET Core, .NET Standard, like all that kind of under the covers stuff. That isn't, it's not like things that consumers will care about, obviously, but it's a really big developer event and a developer education event.
So this is not Connect with a K.
Connect.
And why this and Build? Like, why do they need a separate event?
You know what? It's funny. We talk about Build as a developer event, which it is, but it's not just a Windows. It's like more than that. It's like a Windows event also Build tends to be. And this is more like ASP.NET and .NET Standard, .NET Core, like those things that they also come out at Build too, but this is a show that really, I think, focuses more on cross-platform and kind of the developer messaging around that.
Hasn't Visual Studio has often come out in the fall, hasn't it, late in the year?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's related to that release schedule.
I know. I bet it's about time. I wouldn't be surprised to see Visual Studio 2016 come out around then.
Yeah. I mean, they used to have like a VS Live event, right, that they would launch that.
Mm-hmm. So this could be that.
And this one's where?
New York, again.
Are you going to all three?
Hey, guys, I appreciate you having three events in a row in Mary Jo's backyard, but I live in Dedham.
Dedham.
I'm just saying, throw me a bone.
Yep.
Something. Mm-hmm. Like just a Sway event, Dedham. Maybe.
In the old Dedham post office.
Yeah. Right. Like, we could have it in front of the Apple store at Legacy Place. Dedham, it's nice.
Oh, I get it now. Microsoft does not want to do an event at anywhere called Legacy Place.
No.
Nice.
It's
a new place. I don't know why they called it Legacy Place.
Because it's remembering the legacy of Dedham through the years.
That's right.
All right. Three events, and we will be covering all three. I'm going to be getting up very early in the morning next Wednesday.
I know. What are you guys doing on Wednesday? What's the game plan?
So you're both of you are going to go to the event, I presume.
No, I'm not.
I was confused. So we went back and forth. So you, okay, so, well, then you want to join us for our live coverage, or do you have something else to do?
Yeah, that was, okay. I believe that's already planned.
I think we have Ed Bott. I think we have you. Good. All right. And I'm going to get up in the morning, make myself a nice pot of coffee.
I expect you to be wearing your pajamas with the feet.
I will. I have them right here. SpongeBob.
10 a.m. Eastern.
7 a.m. my time.
Yep.
So we'll do that. That's Wednesday, the October 26th. I'm getting up again, I guess, for the Thursday announcement, too. Actually, no, Apple's always at West Coast time. So
they'll be later, right?
They have plenty of time to send out that invitation, huh?
Oh, they wait. No, they wait. Actually, it'll go out tomorrow. Today or tomorrow.
It will? Wow.
Yeah. If it's real. Yeah, no, that's what they do. 1 week ahead of time. Apple is so arrogant because they just know. Journalists will have to buy last minute.
I think when you know you can get away with anything, you should never have to be nice to anybody. I agree. It's so terrible.
Yeah. It's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
The rumor is it will be in Cupertino, which means it'll be either at the Flint Center or more likely a small venue on the Apple campus. Who knows? You know, I could see Apple saying, "Hey, it's pretty close to done. Why don't you let's do our first event at the new campus?"
Oh yeah,
we can hold it at the Cupertino Apple Store.
Oh, Apple's calling you right now, Paul.
They are. Hey. Hello. Where's my invitation?
Hey, I hear the marimba. There's a
Thanks
marimba.
For buying an iPhone.
now sound like everyone else in the herd.
I know, right?
All right.
Yeah, so I'm still kind of interested about next week's event because we don't really know what is going to happen at this event still.
Really? I thought we did.
We think we've heard rumors, right? Like we've talked about, we think they might show a Surface All-in-One type device, but we're not sure. That they are going to. There's some people who think they're going to announce Kaby Lake refreshes of Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book, but are they? No idea. And Paul and I have talked back and forth about that. Like, does it even make sense for them to refresh those devices right now with Kaby Lake or wait till spring and announce the new Surface Pro 5 and Surface Book 2, which is what we think they're going to do? And then we do know there's going to be Windows 10 news. So, you know, we think they're going to talk a lot about Redstone too. But how far are they going to go with talking about it? I mean, are they going to, like, say, here's all the features coming? Or are they just going to take a couple features and say, hey, here's what the holographic shell, adding the holographic shell to Windows 10 is going to mean for you? We don't know. I feel like there's tons we don't know about this event still.
Well, that's good. You know what?
Yep.
We always know too much about the Apple events. And it's it's nice to have a surprise. I loved the hinge or the you know, the pop-off screen surprise in the Surface Book event. Was that? That's almost exactly a year ago, right?
I tweeted about that before the show, by the way. But
I know, I but you didn't have the courage of your convictions, Paul.
Right.
You should have jumped up and said, no, wait, there's more. It's not just a
clothespin. So when they, if you remember that event, when they did the first promo video for it, they presented it just as a laptop.
Right.
And as they went through it, I was like, huh. I'm like, I was told the screen was going to come off. This is nothing like what I was told. And then they did a new version of it, and the screen popped up. And I was like, you bastards.
It was a well-done reveal, even for you who knew what was going to happen.
It was.
Yeah, I thought I thought I had been fooled.
Will we expect to see the guy with a hat? What's
Brian
his
guy
name?
With the hat. Oh.
Brian. the former the cruise singer.
Yeah.
Maybe. He might be there.
Yeah. I got to show you something. Let me show you something. This is going to be beautiful. You're going to love this. That'd be fun.
We think Panos is going to be there. Panos Panay.
PP. Old PP.
Oh, and they also have hinted that, well, they haven't hinted. Sources have hinted. They haven't told us anything. But sources have told us that there's some gaming component to this announcement, too.
Right.
Ooh. I'm excited.
It could be pretty good. I mean, I feel
it's
like
nice
we've
before
we've
the event happens, because right now it could be anything.
Yeah.
It could.
After the event.
It could be everything.
It could be.
It could be anything and everything.
You're right. It's the ultimate.
You know what I kind of thought after thinking more about this was, I thought they might even show some Office Next stuff at this October 26th event, just to show you like, hey, here's where we're going with Windows 10 and how Office is going to change to work better with Windows 10. But then now they're having a separate Office event, and I think that's better, because I think they were kind of, if they did combine those things, it would have been too much. I mean, too many things in one event.
Yeah.
Too many things.
We'll see. So, yeah, I'm going to be there at the event in New York, and then I'm going to do Windows Weekly Live with you guys from the event, and we're just going to start it a little later so that we can do it.
Yeah. So noon our time, 3 p.m. Pacific, you think that'll work out?
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're going to give us a special guest for the show who we don't know who this is yet. But
but you'll sure want to talk to him.
Yes.
It's going to be some homeless guy from outside.
Hey, Paul, Mary Jo. How you doing? This is exciting. Good. So next Wednesday, put a bookmark in your calendar there. Put a pin in it. Starting early 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, the live coverage. And they're going to stream it, right? We're kind of counting on that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you, me, and
otherwise, it's going to be the driest live coverage.
Well, I see
ever
here
seen
on Twitter that they have announced something. So we'll watch the live stream together. Yep. It's always fun to do that. And I'll be in a snarky mood because it'll be tired. And
and I'll be in a snarky mood because I'm me.
You are you. And it'll be fun. And then can just say, why did I ever agree to do this? And then, so after that's over, do you think it'll go? How long will it go?
I think it's going to go like 2 hours. And then I think we're going to have, like, be able to stick around and do whatever, if they announce hardware, like have hands-on time, I hope.
So that's what. So that's why we're starting Windows Weekly later, is so that you have time to get in there.
Yeah.
Now
they have things scheduled.
We could start earlier if you know you're like sitting around at 11 and going or 2 and going.
If I am, I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, let us know. We'll start earlier, but we'll plan for noon.
Yeah.
And we'll have to keep it somewhat short because then we have to get to a Twig and we have the other shows. But I think we can keep it to 90 minutes, probably, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's plenty.
Especially
of time.
Since you guys will have done the morning show already and animated.
Yeah, we can whip through those, but your special guest will be exciting. So. Noon to noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern to about 4:30 Eastern, Windows Weekly. So it's going to be a big money morning, Wednesday. It will be dialing for dollars, so make sure you remember the count and the amount. And we could be calling you. That's nobody.
If everything
that.
Goes right at 2 o'clock in the morning the following night, Mary Jo and I will be sleeping in Las Vegas. Not insane.
Wow.
Sorry, let me rephrase.
Nobody sleeps in Las Vegas. It's a city that never sleeps.
I can assure you, by the time I arrive, I'll
so that's be that show is 2 weeks hence.
No, so
no, it's that show. It's that
is
it's
the
next
day
week.
After. Yeah.
Wow, you guys. So we won't be broadcasting from the Vegas event.
No, because we're still here. When that
yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. And then
we come back. Then it's November 2nd.
Right. And then it's another event.
How and we it's on a Wednesday also.
How are we going to handle that?
We'll figure that one out.
So we don't even know yet because that's not been announced. We don't know the time.
No, we do.
It has.
You got an invite.
Yeah, I've got an invite.
I would imagine that one will just be a normal show unless they provide you with some facility.
Okay.
Yeah, there. I would think so. Right.
So you'll be done with the unveiling by 11 a.m.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Or, I'm sorry, 2 p.m. your time. Okay, good. All right. Wow. And then you're going to the Netherlands at some point next month.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Very exciting. All right. You know what you guys need if you're going to be getting around like that? You're going to have
drugs?
Yeah. No, but we can arrange that as well. I was thinking of the tracker. Because you know what? You could put these in your luggage. Did you know that? Our show today brought to you by The Tracker at thetracker.com. This is a really cool. I've got a tracker on my keychain because that's what I lose. What do you lose? What item is it that you misplace? Everything from your keys to your remote control to your car to your luggage. Yeah, I know people who put trackers in their luggage as well. It's a coin-sized device. Made with anodized aluminum, so it's very thin. Unlike those other guys, by the way, this one has a replaceable battery. You know, there are Bluetooth trackers out there that when the battery dies, you have to throw it out. That's crazy. This is thin and light, but the battery life depends on how you use the tracker because you can do a lot of stuff with this. For instance, you can have two-way separation alerts so that if you leave your keys behind, your phone beeps at you, but also the tracker can beep at you if you leave your phone behind. See, isn't that cool? If you lose your phone, you can press this button right here on the tracker and it'll make the phone make loud noises and of your choice. I like to have mine snort like a pig. I'm over here. But that's up to you. So you're going to get battery life. If you turn on all the features, maybe 4 or 5 months, and by the way, the battery life, they've been improving this over and over, so it's getting better and better. A year with normal use, and then you pop out, you open the door here, and you pop in another one of those lithium ion, coin-sized batteries. That's awesome. Did you know the average, I love this, is from Newsweek, the average American spends 55 minutes a day looking for things they know they have but can't find. Almost an hour a day. Think of all the time the tracker is saving. Once you, it's Bluetooth LE. That's why the battery lasts so long. You can add a laser engraved message on each tracker Bravo. So, for instance, it's a great for pets. This is light and small enough to put around your cat even, or your dog. And if you you do that, they have a water-resistant sleeve you can put it in. So you can engrave Fido's name and phone number on that. It also, as you can see, they have silkscreen printing on here. Actually, I think it's some sort of UV laser printing. So you can get any image put on there as well. It's really cool. Your phone, the tracker software on your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize the alerts, so you can have the two-way separation or whatever. And here's one of the things I really like about the tracker. Because they've sold so many, 1.5 million devices in the U.S. alone, you have now this crowd GPS network that's really, really cool. Your lost item shows up on a map, even if you're not near it. Now, you understand that these are Bluetooth, so once you get 100 feet away, your phone's going to lose track of this. But the beauty part is when anybody who uses the tracker, and like I said, there's a lot of them, 1.5 million out there in the wild, anybody who's got the tracker software on their phone, when they walk by your tracker, their phone will go, oh, there's Leo's tracker, and it'll ping me. It'll say, hey, your keys were just seen in Las Vegas on the craps table. Well, or whatever. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Right now, a great time to get the Tracker because you can get it and get 30% off your entire order. Visit thetracker.com and don't forget to use the promo code Windows when you're checking out. Windows for 30% off your entire order. Thetracker.com. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We are talking about, and by the way, thank you to the Tracker for sponsoring the show, making it possible. We're talking about Windows. We're talking about Microsoft. We are talking about Redstone 2. I always, you know, when you say Redstone, you're probably, you guys probably don't remember the Redstone rockets, right? Wasn't that for the Mercury program? Hmm. I always think of the Redstone rockets when you say that.
Yeah. Huh.
But that's not.
This is a different Redstone.
This is a different Redstone.
This is Minecraft Redstone.
Right.
Right.
Right. And again, with the younger generation, they'll think of Redstone as of course, the thing that powers the intelligence in Minecraft. Well, no, if you want to make a device in Minecraft, you need Redstone to power it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Obviously, Leo.
Everybody knows that. I know. Why am I even saying it? I know. I'm sorry. So Redstone 2 is the next big update. Is that right?
Right. It's the one you've been getting. If you're in the Insider program, you've been getting builds of Redstone 2 lately.
Right.
So we've been calling it a spring update because that's what our sources had told us. But Microsoft made a little error here, and they published some documentation with the actual build number for Redstone 2.
Well,
so we know now 1703. Version number. Version number 1703, which means March.
Oh, 2017. March 2017, 1703. Oh.
Yep.
Well, now that's really? You think that's a...
Yeah.
That's reliable.
I asked around.
All right. There you go.
It's the ship target. The ship target for Redstone 2 is March 2017. So that's a little earlier than I was thinking. I don't know if Paul had heard that date before, but...
You know, just spring, but that's the earliest possible date. It could be and still be spring, right. I guess.
True. Right? Yep.
That's a Redstone rocket, by the way.
Uh-huh.
That sent the Mercury astronauts into space. And now is going to send your Windows machine into space.
Yes, it is.
What? How do we like it so far, Paul? I got off the Insider build, as you know.
So I've been debating about how to write about this. I actually just got both of the machines I use regularly off of it. And you know how it is. Like, you know, people like us who are into technology, we like testing this stuff, you kind of have this up and down relationship with beta technology. It can be very frustrating sometimes. It's interesting, obviously, to test the next stuff. But I've just had too many problems, and I obviously need to get work done. So I actually just spent the better part of the past few days getting Redstone 2 back on a different computer, so just so I can have it on a real computer and actually test it. But anyway, so far, I don't think there are any really dramatic changes. But if you have a Surface device, like a modern Surface device, Surface Pro 4, Surface Pro 3, I think, as well, Surface Book, certainly, you have what's called a precision touchpad. And there aren't actually that many PCs that have this kind of technology in them. I think the Dell XPS 13 does, but I know the HPs don't. I know the Lenovo ThinkPads don't. But if you do have a precision touchpad, you get unique capabilities in Windows, and they're enhancing those in Redstone 2. So you can get really fine control over all of the multi-finger gestures and things that you can do on the trackpad, kind of like you have on a Mac, but I think far more configurable as well. So I just started looking at that today. I'll write something up about that feature soon, but I think that's maybe the one, you know, a semi-major thing we've seen, and it just doesn't impact a lot of people because only so many, you know, only some people have access to precision touchpad.
So if, you know, I mean, I have one right now. I can do stuff with it now, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to have Redstone 2.
No, and Surface devices in particular have their own Surface utility that probably has further functionality along those lines. But I took screen. I mean, I can't show them on the show, obviously. But I took screenshots of what this looked like before and after. And basically, what they've added is kind of a. It's not so much a wizard, but it's just a graphical interface to determine what happens when you go in different directions with certain numbers of fingers, you know, what different taps do. You can launch certain applications via the trackpad, or, you know, perform certain actions or whatever. It's just a more graphical way of kind of really getting a kind of a fine grain, amount of configuration for the trackpad. But you have to have, you know, a compatible device. So I ended up using a Surface Pro 4 for this.
Hmm. Right, because most PCs still don't have precision trackpads, right? I mean, newer ones do.
What does
even
that mean?
No, but even new ones don't.
Is it higher resolution?
No, this is a tough name because it sort of suggests that other trackpads aren't as good. But a company like HP, I don't actually know for a fact, but let's say HP uses Synaptics trackpads,
right,
or
most people
Lenovo,
right.
Yeah, probably does the same, or has some other company, whatever it is. Those companies supply their own configuration utilities for the trackpad, and they also support multi-touch,
right,
and multi-swipe gestures and all kinds of things like that. But this is built into Windows, and so if you have, I guess the way to think of it is it's a native interface in Windows for high precision touchpads or trackpads or whatever. But that doesn't mean that the trackpad on an HP or ThinkPad isn't just as good. It's just that you have to go through their interface. So I think, you know, like I said, Surface does it, of course, because they're Microsoft. And I believe that Dell does it on at least some of their machines, including the XPS 13.
Does the HP Spectre have it? I can't remember now.
It doesn't.
No.
Yeah, none of the HPs do. But again, that doesn't mean they do have an interface for this same type of thing. It's not, you know, it doesn't look the same,
right,
but they offer basically the same functionality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's still very early in Redstone 2 build days, even though it's coming in March. That's why we haven't seen a lot of the, quote, major features, and we're just seeing things like the precision trackpad stuff. I think at the event next week, we'll start hearing about things that are much bigger than that. Hopefully.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think that's what the event is partially about, is it's going to be the unleashing of this stuff. We'll probably, in the weeks after that, get our first look at Windows Holographic, you know, on any PC or whatever. Yeah.
All right. Anything else worth noting?
Yep.
In that build.
just that I've gotten it off of my computers, I guess.
They did something different with the start menu in that build, right?
Oh, that was actually in the previous build. But yeah.
Was it?
So in the anniversary update, they made a controversial UI change to the start menu where the all apps list is always visible next to the tiles area. And a lot of people find this to be very ugly. They created a third column for, you know, some system folders and for some system functions like settings and power and so forth. But I actually kind of hated it at first. Now I just don't really care. I look at it now and I think, you know, it's fine. But I guess in Redstone, I know in the current builds of Redstone 2, and I assume this will carry through to the final version, they're now giving you the ability to remove the all apps list from being there all the time. And so it's a little bit more like it used to be, I guess. And it creates kind of a cleaner look that's more tile centric. So if you want that kind of thing, I think there are probably more people out there that want no tiles and only the all apps list or whatever, but they're at least giving you that opportunity if you want it.
All right.
Yeah.
I like I said, got off the insider track, just want the regular thing like you. My Surface Book, ever since your fix of last week, has been up to date and running very nicely, very smoothly.
Good to hear.
You understand the sort of the kind of weirdness of beta testing, right? It's neat that Microsoft is giving us this capability to kind of be on the forefront of what's happening and really see, you know, early features and so forth. It's fun. But then you have these weird things go wrong, and I think at some point there's enough that you're like, okay, I can't do this anymore.
I'm beat down a little bit. Yeah.
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 And especially in this day and age with rapid release, I mean, it's not just Windows, it's Office and a lot of other Microsoft solutions. They're updated like every, you know, so quickly.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
It's hard enough to keep track of the public stuff.
Right. Outlook and Skype. By the way, Paul, I'm mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
You got the new Outlook.com, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Leo?
You don't have it, Leo?
Wait a minute. I must, right?
It's everything I've ever dreamed of.
They couldn't. They wouldn't. They couldn't. They wouldn't. They did.
No. That's old. Wait.
No.
Yeah, that's old.
Yeah, because it says outlook.com. Yeah.
The new one says Outlook Mail.
Yeah. So I guess I'm the last person now.
No, you are not.
One of the last people. Yeah, there's others.
I thought Paul and I were brothers and comrades in arms, but no. Mm-hmm. He's gone ahead. He's jumped on the lifeboat, leaving me.
Yeah. When you're in the trenches and you get the note saying you can go home, it's enough cuddling in the foxhole. I'm leaving.
That's it, right? Bye, Paul. Sorry. Right if you get work. Jeez. Here we
Best
are.
Of luck.
You're gonna, Best of you're luck. You're going to be really sad now, Leo, that you don't have the new Outlook.
Why?
Because this new Outlook.com premium service that isn't now in public preview, in order to use it in preview, you have to have the new Outlook.
Okay. And what do I get and how much does it cost for the premium service?
Well, it's going to cost, as part of an offer for the first year, $19.95. And then the regular price is going to be $50 a year.
Oh, I'd do that. Ooh.
This is the thing where you get ad-free inbox plus a domain that you can share among five people.
Ooh. See, I pay a lot more than that for a domain that I have my family members use. Mm-hmm. You know, our custom family domain. That would be
Where
nice.
Do you go through?
Am I using Hover for that? I can't remember. I think I'm using Hover for that.
So I would.
That's
I
where
guess,
it's registered.
It's hard to know what to compare this to exactly, but Google Apps offers the same basic thing, right? And I think it's. I think they make you pay monthly now.
It's probably bundled in with other stuff for Google for Work, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so.
Google has a domain registrar themselves.
Yeah, right, right. And that's, I don't know how the Microsoft thing works. In the past, they had their own. Remember, it was domain.microsoft or domains.live.com or whatever was their custom
domain.
Now,
if I get that $20 a year deal, does it revert to $50 after the first year?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. And then the first year, you can bring over your existing domain for free that you have. But then you have to, I think then you have to pay, right?
Because
I do, I'm paying more than that for Leoville.
No, I think you can buy a domain through Microsoft for free as part of the first year. Okay. But then you're going to have to pay for it.
Oh, but then you still pay domain fees.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's like $10 a year. That's
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but add that to the 50, it makes it 60. Right. I mean, that starts to
add up. Yep. Yeah, it's funny how this stuff got really expensive. It used to be relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
Okay.
But people seem pretty excited about the premium product. A lot of people were asking about it. Right now, the preview is limited to the U.S. And a guy in Germany who listens to Windows Weekly told us also open in Germany right now.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, for some reason.
Like most things, it's U.S. and German first.
Right, right, yeah. We don't know when they're going to actually start charging for it and take the preview tag off. So if you try it right now, I don't believe you have to pay to try the preview.
Of
Outlook.com Premium.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think you don't. I signed in yesterday and it didn't ask me for any payment information.
Oh, okay.
Huh. They shouldn't charge for a preview, should they?
I don't know. I mean, this one, it seems like this has been in some kind of a private beta for quite some time.
It was in a private pilot. It's been in private pilot since at least the start of this year.
But I'm reasonably sure on more than one occasion I've gone to that site, told them I was interested, and now that they've kind of launched the preview, I've never heard from them. Like, they've never emailed me to say, hey, by the way, this thing you said you wanted is available.
Yeah. So maybe you do have to pay for it. I didn't think I paid unless because my credit card's on file with them through my Microsoft account.
That's the beauty part.
Ding.
They don't have to ask you. They just charge you.
Exactly. Yeah. So, There's a whole FAQ on the preview site that you can go check out. The preview page is premium.outlook.com. You can go check out all the features. Sign in to start.
And speaking of signing in, a single sign on for Skype. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. Single sign on means what? I sign in and I don't have to sign off. I don't know what that means.
Paul, really, I'm going to hope you can explain this one because this is one of the most confusing announcements I've ever seen.
No, she's right that the announcement was incredibly confusing. And I do have a bit of background on the kind of whys of this, but the way to think of it is Skype used to be its own company. And so Skype had Skype IDs, and you created a Skype ID, you created a password, and that's how you signed into Skype. The Microsoft bought Skype. And then eventually they gave you the ability to sign into Skype with a Microsoft account because at that time they were getting rid of Windows Live Messenger. Remember, they wanted to move people over to Skype. So they had to make that a possibility. People who did that have a combined account that's two different ways to access the same thing, but only in Skype, right? So whatever my Skype ID is, I actually don't even know what it is anymore, but it's tied to my Microsoft account, which is my Hotmail account. And so I could at any point over the past few years sign into Skype using either that Skype ID and its own unique password, I think, or this Microsoft account, which has, of course, its own password. The Microsoft account, because of the nature of what it is deeply protected, right? They support two-factor authentication. They have all these recovery options. It's important. It's your online persona for everything that Microsoft does, Xbox Live, Office 365, Outlook.com, whatever. So what they're doing now, so the single sign-on means that the integration between these two account types is now complete. And so not only can you sign into Skype using your Microsoft account, if you want to, you can now sign into any of the other Microsoft services using your Skype ID, assuming you previously tied it to your Microsoft account. If you didn't, you can do that now. Why would you want to do that? I'm not really sure. I mean, if you have a long time Skype ID and you're just used to using it and you use the other Microsoft stuff less often, that might make more sense to you. So you could go to Outlook.com, sign in with whatever your Skype ID is, and you get through. The reason they did
Can I revert?
Revert?
Well, see, okay. So I did that. I had a nice Skype ID that I really liked, and I let them take it. Mm-hmm. And now I have my Microsoft ID as my Skype ID. But right. Can I take that back?
That I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Right. But you've already done it, probably.
Fortunately, I have multiple Skype IDs, so it's not the end of the world.
I think I do too, actually. In fact, I think when we first started doing this podcast, I think that might have been when I got my Skype ID.
Right, yeah.
And then something went wrong. I lost the password or whatever it was. And then now I have a new one that is basically the old one with the number 2 on the end of it or something like that. I don't know, because I use the Microsoft account now because I was a Windows Live Messenger guy and we signed into Messenger or whatever. So there are some big advantages to this for people who do use Skype, especially people who previously only had Skype IDs. One is for password recovery or account recovery. Like I just said, in fact, it really did happen to me. Skype doesn't have sophisticated recovery tools. So for a lot of people, if you lose your password, you have to sign in on a new device or new PC or whatever, you're locked out of your account. And they had no real way to help you if they just didn't have all the advanced stuff on the back end for account recovery. The other thing that's nice about it, though, is you get pass-through of the security features in the Microsoft account. So, for example, if you did and you should configure two-step authentication or two-factor authentication, whatever they're calling it, for your Microsoft account, now when you sign in with your Skype ID, you will get your second-factor authentication prompt. And so they've actually made the Skype account more secure, both proactively in the case of two-factor and, I guess, reactively in the case that you need to recover your account. So it's really about bringing Skype IDs into the 21st century, I guess, if that makes sense, and just making it more secure.
I actually prefer to use my Skype ID because I have a really complicated Microsoft password and second factor turned on. It's much easier. Skype doesn't need to be quite that protected, so I have a password I can remember
Skype. Yeah. Well, so sometime in the near future, you will be prompted with whatever two-factor prompt you get via your Skype account if you set that up on your Microsoft account.
I guess that's okay. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. Not every time, right? It doesn't make – Skype's not going to – come up every time you reboot Windows and ask you to sign in again. But that's not how two-factor works anyway. Like, it will happen occasionally.
That's part of the problem, right? They want you and I to keep Skype running all the time in Windows.
Yeah.
So it's a messaging thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is part of this, too, that Microsoft wants to force people to tie their Skype IDs to their Microsoft accounts?
So I don't know that Microsoft would use the word force.
But, encourage, incent.
They want to be helpful in forcing us.
Right. Well,
because right now Skype ID is not tied to my Microsoft account. At all.
You know, tying your Skype ID to your Microsoft account is scary in the same way that I remember when I had to tie my Amazon account to my Audible account.
I
could think was, if I lose either half of this, I'm going to murder somebody.
Right.
You know,
I did that with the Audible.
I did too. And it
works. Works. But, it's a little, I had some
You know how scary it is, right? Yeah. You get that feeling like this is, because on either side of the equation, like that stuff is important in some way. And you don't want it to go wrong on either side of it. So. I connected these accounts so long ago, I can't even remember, you know, what it was like or what, you know, so I don't know. I'm not really sure, you know, if you wanted to take your Skype account off of your Microsoft account, I'm sure you must be able to do that, I guess. Or if you were to just do it now, in other words, so someday in the near future, will you be prompted by Skype to say, hey, you get all these additional features if you know tie it into a Microsoft account.
I mean, that's what I think it is.
I think so too. I think they can make a pretty good case about why that's a good idea, right? For the security reasons I just noted, but not yet. But I could picture that happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
I think it's supposed to start. Some people said they're already seeing this. I think officially it's supposed to start happening next week.
Yeah, so I think you could just try it. Like, you could go to Outlook.com in a different browser or an incognito window or whatever and try signing in with your Skype ID. Well, no, yours isn't connected, so you couldn't do it, Mary Jo.
Mine isn't.
But if you have an account that's connected, that should work or could work. It has worked. Brad tried it. He said it worked.
So that's what they're doing, and we're not exactly totally sure why, but the blog post on this, it was like literally like 100 lines. It was tiny. And then after I read it, I'm like, I have no idea what we are talking about here.
So I, when Microsoft, the PR company, whoever sent that to me, you get the little blog post. You're like, this must have gotten truncated. This can't be the whole thing. But she said something to me, you know, I talked to Skype back in July about, you know, where the service was going and how they were moving to this new infrastructure and everything. And she said, this ties back to the conversation you guys had about restoring accounts and everything. So I went back and looked at my notes and I was like, oh, I see what she's saying. Okay. So that's where I got the information about account recovery from. They didn't really talk about that too much. I think they might've glossed over something about account recovery, but I think that's a big, big part of it. Just providing all Skype users with that security backend that you just get as part of an MSA.
I can give Paul chills. Watch this. Do you run when you hear that? Do you say, "Oh, somebody's calling me on Skype"?
So you know you've seen the Manchurian Candidate.
He's gonna go kill somebody.
Yeah,
exactly. All right. So at some point, when I launch my Skype with my non Microsoft account, it's gonna say, "Would you like to merge it?" Because it stopped doing that. I mean, I did it the first time, and then I regretted it, and I went and used a different one. And okay, but I, you know, it'd be really interesting if I could use my Skype account to log into Windows. No, that's not.
Isn't that kind of what they're saying? They're saying you can use your Skype ID once you tie them to log into Xbox Live and OneDrive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I kind of like that, except it's less secure, so I probably shouldn't.
I suppose you could sign into Windows with it too.
Right.
Well, it's not less secure, right? So if you know, think about like all the abstractions we do to security. Like, you create a Microsoft account that has it's an online account, so it's something at something.com.
Right.
It has a complex password, hopefully.
Right.
You protect it with two-factor authentication. Right. Hopefully, you have all your backup methods.
Yeah. So did all that stuff. Yep.
Then you go to your computer and you're like, okay, well, you have to type this thing in once, and like, I just want to have a PIN. I don't want to do this anymore.
That's true.
And so
that's true.
I think this is, I mean, the first time you do it, and maybe occasionally thereafter, you know, Windows sometimes will say, hey, you need to sign in again.
Right.
That's the point where you're going to have to do the second factor. This is kind of the same thing, right? It's a simpler way to sign in. So instead of, you know, therod@hotmail.com or whatever, I could just, I don't even, I think it's ptherod or whatever my Skype ID is. It's a little easier to type.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the password is, by the way. So right. I don't even know how I would do that. I really don't know what the password is.
Yeah.
You know, for people that are coming at things from the Skype world, I don't know if signing into Windows makes any sense or if that's even possible yet, but as a Skype user and you attach your stuff to Microsoft account, you get X amount of storage at OneDrive, you get an Outlook.com account for email and calendar, and you get all this stuff. And so this is maybe your entryway into the Microsoft world from the side door.
Yeah.
And if you're comfortable with that Skype ID, you can just keep using it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get it. You did it. You did a better job than the press release.
He did. Yes, he did.
Explaining this. What would we do without Paul?
Well, yes.
By the way, I have a tweet from Frank X. Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted me.
Okay.
Why is he responding to you?
What did he say?
I don't know. Just like, I agree. Okay. Isn't he like head of communications for Microsoft?
He is.
Yes, he is. Yes, okay.
He is. I'm nervous that he knows my name.
You should be.
He's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
He's okay.
Never. Yeah. You don't want to be the subject of his laser focus.
Anybody with a middle initial X, but I just worry. I just worry, like, yeah. Maybe he's a mutant. Maybe he's
actually, you know. The morning of the LinkedIn announcement, I was out in Colorado, and I think it was 7:30 in the morning, some early time, whatever it was, and he called me.
Whoa!
And you don't want to see that guy's name on the phone. Like, I mean, I love the guy. Don't get me wrong.
Frank X. Shaw.
But you're like, all you can think is like, I'm getting dragged into the principal's office for some reason. Like, you know, like what happened? But. Right. You know, he's a great guy.
I figured he was responding to you, and he didn't know who I was. It just was stuck in there somewhere.
Hopefully he feels that I gave a semi-accurate view of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steven Sandhoff says this was from a previous conversation. So yeah. I guess Ed Bott had tweeted something about...
I just got sucked into something.
...doing the live show. Yeah. And
oh, that's right. That's right.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Okay.
As long as he's paying attention to you guys and not me, I'm okay. I just get caught in the spray.
I'm willing to deflect at any time.
Yeah. Let's take a little bit of a break, if you don't mind, and talk about one of our fine sponsors. I just want to pull something up on my screen here and show you something that's going to make you all just salivate. Just salivate. This is my bandwidth here on my computer right here via Wi-Fi.
What?
That is my Sonic connection. That's a gigabit connection. And actually, we have 10 gigabit fiber into the Twit Studios. Russell, our IT guy, limited it into my computer to 1 because he was afraid. I don't know what he was. I'd start a broadcast
remind me again
network.
Who's the boss, Leo?
Just don't give Leo 10 gigabits. Well, it's funny. When we got 10 gigabits, Russell said, okay, but you understand that nothing, you know, I said, no, I understand. Nobody's going to get any, no individual is going to have a 10 gigabit connection because actually it's Ethernet. And nobody can support that speed unless you have a very special card put in there and stuff. But we have great internet because we have a great internet service provider. You could have the same. You could be seeing 930 megabits download on your computer. If you live, but I'm sorry to say, you have to live in Northern California. S-O-N-I-C, sonic.com/twit. Find out if you can get their residential or business fiber to the premise networks. Gigabit connectivity, San Francisco, the North Bay Area up here, and the East Bay. Now, listen to what you get. And this, the reason I love telling people about this, I know a lot of you, most of you are going to say, well, I can't get that. But this is what it should be. When you see other internet service providers saying, oh, you know, yeah, but you have a cap. You know, you can only use whatever, you know, a terabyte a month or whatever. Sonic has no caps. No cap. And listen to how much you pay. No caps. 15 email accounts. A gigabyte of storage. Personal web hosting. Domain of your choice. Fax line service, a home phone connection too, with unlimited local and long distance calling, And by the way, it's easy to port your current phone number, your home number, over to Sonic. $40 a month. For all of that, a gigabit connection with no limits, no caps, phone, long distance, free, long distance, unlimited, local, and long distance, $40 a month, and download speeds up to a gigabit. What I love about Sonic, and if you go to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, you look at their ratings, Sonic is the internet service provider for standing up for your privacy, for providing friendly local customer support, uncapped bandwidth, and affordable pricing across the board. They advocate for their customers. And I know a lot of you are listening, you can't get it, but go to your ISP and say, see what Sonic's doing. And if you're lucky enough that you can get Sonic in your neighborhood, why wouldn't you? $40 a month. They also do a bundle for TV, too, with satellite TV, so you get that, too, if you want. $40 a month. Join the internet revolution. Sonic.com/twit and receive your first month of Sonic internet and phone service for free. And if you bundle with this, you'll save $120 on your Sonic bill. Wouldn't you like to see this on your screen?
Yes.
I'm going to do it again just because it's fun. This is probably why Russell doesn't let me have 10 gigabits. This is the Netflix, the new Netflix speed test called Fast at Fast.com. But it's, you know, it's the same on all the other speed tests, too. I like DSL reports and all that. This one's just nice and clear. You can see it. 930 megabits per second.
Mine says 84.
I don't want to show you mine at home because I can't get Sonic at home. So, you know, it used to be that they had Cyber Monday right after Black Friday because the story was people would come to work and do all their shopping online shopping. So Monday after Thanksgiving was the big day. And, you know, that's a long time ago because nowadays you probably have more speed at home, frankly. And you certainly do if you have Sonic. But we're in the flip-flop situation. I come in if I want to download something. Oh, it's so cool. You download... I don't know, the Windows Media Creation Tool, download Windows 10, 3 gigabytes, what is it, almost 4 gigabytes? You know, it's a half a minute. Love it. Continuing on, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, now that I've made them very unhappy, we shall move on with the show. talking about everything Microsoft, as we always do on a Wednesday. What is this? Cortana Cube. What's that?
This is a Brad name.
Yep.
Brad Sams, not Brad Smith.
Correct.
Yeah. What does it mean? What do you remember?
Just last week we were saying we wondered whether Microsoft would do something like an Alexa equivalent, right? I mean, an Echo equivalent. And the walking cat, that famous guy on Twitter, who we still don't know who he is, found a bio of somebody working at Microsoft in China that says he's working on, quote, a home hub project aimed to build a smart kitchen based on Cortana and Azure. So Brad and others are saying, maybe this is Echo, but Microsoft style using Cortana and Azure. So my 2 cents, I think it is not. But
because everybody's doing that. I mean, that Google Home.
I know.
This is
here's why. Here's one reason why. Microsoft's kind of getting more and more out of consumer.
Yeah.
And I would be curious to see them do this after them pulling back on things like the band and getting out of the consumer smartphone space. I just don't think it fits with the mission of the company.
I think really. You're right. And this could be a big distraction, right?
I kind of think so. I mean, you know, all of us are like, oh, that'd be cool. It'd be fun to have something like that. And it would get Cortana, you know, get people more used to talking to Cortana. But I just don't see where it fits in. I'm thinking this home hub thing is more a feature of Windows 10 and somehow fits in that way.
I will say the one thing that Google seemed to get right when they announced all that stuff a few weeks back was they talked about kind of having that type of capability across a suite of devices, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the pervasiveness of it is what makes it work. Cortana right now is limited to Windows 10 PCs and to Windows phones. I mean, well, you can get it in an Xbox as well, I guess. But it's, you know, it has kind of a limited range. And I think if they're going to get into this thing, they need to be serious about doing it and just do it. And this is not the type of thing they're very good at. You know, they dabble in Band for a couple of years. They dabble in Zune for a couple of years. They tend to kind of, you know, oh, everyone's doing these things. Let's make one of these. And then they kind of forget about it, you know. Mm. And it's too bad because a lot of that stuff was great. You know, Microsoft back in, I think, the Vista timeframe made incredible networking gear. And they did two generations and they walked away from it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just they tend to do that kind of thing. And I'd hate to see them throw in a little widget and then just never really support it.
I know. Same. You know, and I guess, you know, some people say, well, what about if they do this Surface all in one? Isn't that showing that they're trying to be a consumer company? I don't think so. I think if they do that machine, it's going to be more aimed at business users. It's going to be an all in one for people's work desks. I don't think it's going to be an all in one that they think you're going to use at home, unless you're like me and your work desk is in your home. But I don't know.
Right. No, it has to be pervasive. The thing that Google got really right, you know, for the home was this notion of having multiple devices around your house, and you don't have to think about being in the room or nearby one. You can talk as you walk around, and the right one will always pick it up.
Right.
And that's just smart. That's just really smart. I'm not saying it's going to take off, and I'm not saying it's going to be popular or whatever, but that's the right approach for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to push it into the home, and I just doubt their resolve. That's all I'm worried about.
Yeah.
You know, well, then why do Cortana at all? I mean, do people – what? So minus the phone, minus a mobile play, why do Cortana at all? Do people use it really on the desktop? I find I don't use Siri or Cortana.
Well, okay, so I think there's a reason this stuff started on phones because that's the device that people have and it's really personable. But I think it is this future of pervasive computing that they're all shooting for. And so you bring it out to where your platforms are. Microsoft brings it to PCs, of course. You know, Google puts their stuff on Android devices. They, you know, it's on iOS sort of as an app. It's not the same thing. Just like Cortana on iOS is not the same thing. Right. It's just an app. You know, Apple has a certain presence in the home, and they should be doing more around that. You know, Google is trying to now, and Microsoft, this is a rumor. Like, maybe they're going to do this, maybe they're not. But
do you think it's credible? I mean, I know Mary Jo does not.
I think the technology is credible. I just doubt their ability to see it through. Like, Microsoft's the type of company that would release this thing, and the 117 of us who love Microsoft and love Cortana would buy one, and a year or so would go by, and it would just kind of drift away. And that's what I'm nervous about. Like, I don't like that kind of lack of focus.
Yeah, I think they're experimenting with a lot of these kind of technologies. Like, we know they've done a lot of work in Microsoft research around home automation, right? And this would fit in with that. But we don't know how or if or when any of those things are going to come to market, or if they'll somehow be part of a bigger play for them, like an IoT play that somehow has a link to this. But
they need to be serious about this, because if they're serious about AI and machine learning, this kind of conversational interaction is at the center of it. It's the 2001, I'm sorry, Dave, conversation with the computer in the ship. Like, you ask questions, it responds, you tell it what to do, and you kind of have this conversation. And we do this now in chat apps. I'm doing it now in Duolingo, where you can interact with French bots, which is crazy. you know, you can order pizza and do whatever. And today it's all simple and stupid. And it's like I think I compared it to an Infocom game, where if you don't get the exact wording that it's looking for, the conversation cannot continue. But obviously that's going to change. And, you know, we've been saying this for a while. Microsoft is one of only a handful of companies that can get this right. Mm-hmm. I wish they would show up in a big way and just keep doing it, you know.
But you know, the fact that they don't bundle the Kinect anymore, that the Kinect is kind of fading away. Yeah. That was, I mean, for some of us, that was potentially a Cortana cube. I mean, in fact, I put my Xbox One S in my den, and I didn't keep the Kinect connected because I didn't have that USB adapter. I kind of miss it, I only miss it because I have to find the remote to say, you know, Xbox pause when I'm watching a movie.
Yeah, but so the thing you're talking about is a convenience, right, to interact with a entertainment device.
Yeah, but
right?
It would become Cortana, right? I mean,
yeah, totally. So the thing about Kinect, though, is like the failure of Kinect is not the failure of the voice part of it. It's a failure of the gesture part of it.
Oh, okay.
Like Kinect is interesting because this other thing that was like the sideshow is what really worked well.
Right.
And I, you know, again, it's weird to me how they do things because they should have, with the Xbox One S, have offered a microphone and a little stringy cable that you could have put up on your TV, and that could have been the voice control. And you don't need a giant, expensive Kinect sensor. Most of that stuff is the camera. It's $150. I mean, you just need a $10 part. You know, maybe they'll get there. Maybe that, you know, we're talking about the possibility of gaming stuff at this event next week, and who knows what's going to happen. But I wish they would be serious about this stuff.
But Mary Jo is kind of describing a future for Microsoft that's a little bleak for those of us who like the Xbox, who like the Kinect, who like
sure.
That it's a non-consumer future. And maybe maybe that's the case. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know what's weird? The future of Microsoft right now looks like this. It looks like an enterprise company that also does gaming. Like, that's the weird outlier in their business.
Right.
But I don't see them getting rid of gaming. They seem to be pouring more and more into gaming, not just consoles, but PC gaming and games, gaming
services.
Is it
profitable for them or is it strategic for them?
I don't think it's actually it's strategic.
Me too. More strategic because gaming is the biggest category of apps on mobile. And now that they don't have a mobile phone in the consumer space, that's a credible offering. I think they have to play somehow. So the way you play is you have the best apps and the most services.
Yeah. Xbox is a desirable brand. I think that's the thing they have a hard time giving up. In a world in which they do not have a lot of consumer play, so to speak, the Xbox is that one little shining star. Although, unfortunately, with this generation, as good as the Xbox One is, they've really kind of fallen behind their primary competition in a big way, you know, which is unfortunate. But, you know, the future of Microsoft is cloud services, obviously. I think we all kind of see that. I think it is purely or mostly business-oriented, at least in a direct kind of relationship way. But that's the future. I mean, you still have to transition from what it is today to what it's going to be. And you don't just drop, you know, if the future of Microsoft is cloud services, why even have Xbox? I mean, you know, we still have, there's still millions of people that use Xbox every single day. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not as cynical as keep it around as long as you can because, you know, whatever. I mean, who knows? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they would love for it to really take off in a meaningful way.
Mm. And, you know, we're talking about speech here, we keep talking about it as Cortana devices like Kinect and like an Amazon Echo. But just this week, Microsoft made an announcement that, hey, we've actually approached a new record in speech recognition where we have a word error rate of 5.9%, right?
Oh, that was amazing. That's like it's now as good as a human.
They say. Right. So, but, you know, think about that. So they have a lot of products that work with speech and use speech, like Skype Translator is an example of one where, you know, you can talk in one language and it comes out on the other end in a different language. But I think it was Mark Hackman over at PC World last week wrote an article and said, you know what? Microsoft is doing all these amazing things with speech. Why is it so bad, like doing dictation through Windows?
Like, well, it's going to get better, I think. Bad? I mean, that's what this announcement says, basically, is that our speech recognition is as good as human speech recognition. And, you know, when you look at Google's announcement, I was kind of set straight on that announcement by Ben Thompson of Stratechery on Sunday on Twitter. I think I didn't hear what it was. I wasn't talking to you, Cortana. Thank you.
Whoops.
Ben said, no, the whole point of Google's announcement wasn't about hardware. It was about a pervasive, as you kind of said, Paul, a pervasive machine learning, a pervasive assistant, and getting it in as many different ways as possible. And Microsoft, I mean, this is, I think, the future. I don't think just the home. I think machine learning applied to all of our technologies is the future. I don't think Microsoft wants to abandon that. It doesn't have to be consumer-y. I agree with you on by the way, Cortana Box not being a viable product for them or something they want to get into. But clearly they're not abandoning speech recognition or machine learning.
I mean, the notion of a little cube in your house that you talk to because it's Cortana being a business of any kind is ludicrous, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they shouldn't do it. I mean, it's
well, what you get is data. I mean, this is what Google doesn't.
Yeah,
make money,
exactly.
Right? But you need the data to get better.
And that's the thing that kind of bugs me about Microsoft Band. I feel like they gave up something that was, yeah, I guess it didn't directly make money or whatever, but it's part of this much bigger thing. And I think that's the kind of investment you have to make over several years. You can't just give it up after two.
Yeah.
You know, and when they do that so many times, you just start to doubt anything they're talking about. Right. And so if they announce this Cortana Cube or whatever we're calling it next week, it's like, okay, do we trust them on this one? I mean, are you going to buy a bunch of these and put them all over my house? Is this thing going to be a viable thing a year from now? I mean, how do you trust that it's going to keep going?
I really more and more think Microsoft doesn't want to come out and say, we aren't going to be a consumer company anymore. They don't want to say that because they keep talking about dual use, blah, 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 that consumers and business customers, you can't separate them out.
Sure.
But if you look at where all their efforts and attention are, it's all in enterprise and business now. And they are really trying to get out of hardware. The only thing they're still making that's hardware are the Surfaces, and they are making a profit on those. And Xbox, right?
And
everything
Xbox,
else, all the other hardware, they're pretty much out, except keyboards too, keyboards and mice. Okay, but that's it.
Yeah, but those
they don't want to be. Businesses. They don't want to make. They don't want to be a hardware manufacturer because there's no money in that.
What do they want to be? You know,
they
it was
be
like
a software and services company.
Right.
Well, I just got. I just clicked on Cortana on my. On my Surface Book, and I just got get Cortana on your phone. Then you can reply to messages on your PC.
Yeah,
actually,
good luck with that, Leo.
It doesn't say. Well, I'll tell you what, it's actually not very encouraging because it doesn't say reply to messages. It just says then you can reply messages on your PC.
Good stuff. Yeah.
So it's grammatically incorrect, but
well,
I get the gist.
That, but,
you know,
but Leo, at least that's a pre-release version of Windows 10. So.
Anyway, there's a QR code. They're encouraging me for Apple and Android to put Cortana on there. Does that mean that if I get a message on my phone that I can reply on the computer?
Yes.
Oh.
Mm.
Sort of?
I've done it. Yep.
From Android, yeah.
And on my Windows 10 laptop, I'll see a message come in from my phone because of Cortana. And then I believe I can reply to it on my PC.
Huh. Well, that's nice.
But that's through Cortana. Yeah.
But but it would be an SMS message, or is it some sort of special?
Yeah, it still
message?
Goes through your phone.
SMS.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the basic.
Do I have to use Cortana as my SMS client? No, no.
No, no. No.
Somehow it's picking it up.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
It's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Shows you, though, Microsoft still has ambitions, not. You know, as you said, in mobile, but also in services.
Yes. And that's the thing. You know, we're kind of debating, are they a consumer company? Are they not? I mean, inside Microsoft, there are probably thousands and thousands of people who are very passionate about some consumer products that they're working on, that they, you know, see this big future for that kind of stuff. I know there are people there, and I know as a company, they would still say, we're very much, you know, both enterprise and consumer.
They do say that.
But, you know. We know that 2/3 of their revenues or more have always come from the business side of the fence, and ratio is changing.
No, a lot of their products, when they do have a consumer service, like say OneDrive is an example. Mm-hmm. You know, they have OneDrive for business, OneDrive consumer. They have Skype for business, Skype consumer. So they have like the mirror images of the two things a lot of times. And maybe that's what they'll keep doing going forward so that they will never totally get out of consumer. But as far as consumer hardware, I think they're going to be out. And I think you could argue Surfaces or business PCs, Surface Book, business. I bet this Surface, all of them will be a business PC. The only exception to this is Xbox consoles.
Right.
You know who else is passionate?
Who?
Bill Belichick. That's who's passionate.
He's so passionate, he threw a Surface Pro across the field.
Yep. We've all had that experience, you know.
Yeah. His was covered in rubber for good reason.
Yep.
Actually, and now when I go to my my news on my windows, it talks about other NFL coaches endorsing, saying, oh, no, we love our Surface Pro.
Well, there are other coaches who don't use it as well, by the way.
Oh, really? This was the deal the NFL made. And the Patriots, where Bill Belichick hangs his hat, say, well, the NFL, it's not Microsoft's fault exactly. It's really the NFL's fault because they maintain the IT and the connectivity and all that stuff.
But you know what, though? Remember we had this conversation probably a couple of years ago, the first season especially, that these Surface devices were available. Aside from the subtle embarrassment of the fact that it was always the previous generation Surface Pro for whatever reason, covered in inches of padding because these things are incredibly fragile, obviously. And it's football. I mean, these guys throw things around. Everyone called them iPads.
Right.
Players call them iPads. Coaches call them iPads. TV commentators call them iPads. Yeah. Microsoft paid $400 million to get this contract and then gave Apple approximately $1 billion in free advertising because everyone kept talking up iPads. Somebody pointed out to, I think it was Jay Cutler. I think it was him. But somebody had said to one of the quarterbacks in the league, you know, these things aren't actually iPads. And he says, yeah, I know. He says, yeah, it's a knockoff iPad.
Whoa. Right?
Which is even worse.
Even worse. Yeah.
You know, so the problem is almost certainly not the device. The problem is no doubt the connectivity and the many different standards they use. And the NFL is a mess on many levels. But the problem is you've got this guy who is a public stage. He's famous. He's on TV every weekend. And he starts chucking a Surface around. It's got like the Surface color scheme and the logo and everything. And it, to me, this is just Microsoft should have anticipated this kind of stuff. You know, they should have anticipated that people were going to call them iPads. They should have anticipated that someone was going to get sick of this stuff. And, you know, these things failed on the Patriots during the AFC Championship game last year during a drive that the other team got the winning touchdown in, and they did not go to the Super Bowl.
That'd make me mad, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there, Belichick's going back to paper. Got binders binders full of plays.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. How long is this contract for Microsoft? I mean, how much longer is this going to go on?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think they're wondering?
I think they're so enamored of having their brand out there that they almost can't see past the problems. You know, like I don't know how long the contract is. It's very strange.
You know, I'm sure it's a long term deal. And you know what? So what? I think in the long run, I hate to say it, but part of the job is just to get people to be aware of the fact that these things exist.
Sure.
And that's been done.
And they bounce off the grass and they keep working.
And I don't, you know what? Belichick is not known for being like, a, you know, Mr. Technology, for one thing.
No, that's true. And some people have pointed that out on Twitter or whatever. And yeah, fair enough.
We just figure, it's like my dad. That's what he would do.
I know. But the thing is, come on, he's surrounded by a multi-million dollar franchise. People can teach him how to use this thing. They can make sure it's always working, and he's still really upset with it.
Yeah, but he's using a paper binder, and so I think people will go, "Oh well, there he goes." Of course, a digital device, whatever digital device, would be better than a paper binder.
I don't know.
Or if it's paper not reliable, nobody blames a Surface because of internet connectivity. Well, we all suffer that, right?
The thing that probably never gets said is, you know, like, in other words, why are they using these devices, right? A lot of times it's to get an instant replay of what just happened. Right. They like to look,
they can look at the tape on paper.
You can't do that on paper. But you know what they do? You know what they do, and this is the thing that's not really getting talked about a lot. So he's going to go to paper, right? Well, how do you see a replay of the thing that just happened?
They take pictures.
They're printing it out.
They have printers on the field.
Yeah, they're printing out pictures. Like, there's still there's still a technology that's thing true. Happening over there.
Yeah,
and,
that's
you know,
true.
What is that, like a serial port plugged into it or something? Like,
get a printer.
I mean,
here, Bill. You know what? That's what I'm saying is that most people will look at that and go, you know, we all know the guy who has his email printed by his secretary,
yes,
and then
yes.
and it's just we know that's just more of the same. Yeah. I don't think I don't think it hurts the Surface image at all.
I don't know.
And I have to say that I've seen coverage on the on NFL behind the scenes of how coaches are using it, and even in ads. And I think that speaks louder than Bill Belichick throwing it. Maybe it was underinflated. I don't know.
Wow, really?
Hey, that was
here's what
I
I'll
put
say
in
to that, Leo.
Someone removed.
Here's what I'll say.
From the show
you can inflate
notes
it however you want. They're still gonna win.
I put in Deflategate 2, and
somebody took it out
from the show notes by somebody.
We should remember that Paul's probably a Patriots fan.
He might be.
Yeah, might be. Might
He's
just
looking
be.
A little angry right
I'll
now.
I'll just say this to the rest of the country. You could suck it.
Hey, I got no standing at all. We're in Niners country.
Yeah. How are they doing this year?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, my. At least you,
they use services, do they?
Even if
it's
not Bradley for the first four games, at least you have him somewhere on the sidelines. Mm. We got nothing. Surface Hub gets the anniversary update. Wow. That must be something to see when a 70-inch screen gets an update.
30% is what it says on a blue screen.
All your files are just
it's
where you left
gonna them. It's going to take a while, but it's going to be worth it.
Wow. Wow.
And you know what was funny with that, the Surface Hub update? It wasn't just the OS that got the update.
Oh, right,
it was
right.
Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, and peripherals.
Oh, so it doesn't get updated the same way a regular computer does.
Doesn't seem like
right.
it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really Windows 10, right? I mean, I know it's based on Windows 10, but it's kind of this custom solution, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So the update was like some giant, massive update then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So if all those people who have been waiting for the anniversary update to install on their PCs, well, you know,
get
it
a
took
hub.
Them a long time, too.
Get a Surface Hub.
Yep.
How healthy is the PC industry, Paul Theron?
Not very healthy, Leo.
You know, yeah. Everybody, you know, so I'll give you an example. My daughter in Mexico had her MacBook. She had a very nice MacBook Pro for college. She's in college down there just for the semester, an exchange student. And she had it stolen. These things happen. And I said, well, this is a very poor time to buy a new MacBook because I think new ones are coming out. Why don't you try a Chromebook? She said, she got home. She said, Dad, this costs less than a phone. It's worth $179. It's awesome. It does everything I want. I don't think she's going back to Apple.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I can't say I'm unhappy. And then when I see these new, like this new Samsung, the leaked Samsung Chromebook Pro.
Right.
$500, but it looks just like a...
Yep.
A yoga or a, you know, I mean, it's beautiful.
I think the challenges to the PC are pretty well understood. Obviously, the data is pretty clear. Like we know the PC industry has been falling ever since Windows 8 was released. That's a weird coincidence. And I think we talk a lot about this transition and where does it end and does it plateau at some point and everything. And I just looked at the last, I actually looked at 4 years of data, but then I looked at the last two in particular because it seems to really have slowed down. And I think that's really interesting. And so I think we're starting to see a plateau. But there was a point probably 2008-ish or somewhere back then where we were looking at 400 million units a year. And now we're looking at 250. And so the new normal is smaller, you know, and I think that's one of the big things. Mm-hmm. But actually, Mary Jo, you might find this interesting. I found some interesting corroboration for Microsoft's 1.5 billion number. You know, we've talked about the size of the PC base being 1.5 billion. And and I've said a few times, like, this data has never been updated. Like, how do we know this is the truth? Well, we know that there are 400 million Windows 10 devices. We can we have to guesstimate here, you know, how many of those are PC. I estimated about 350 million of them because we know 20 million are Xboxes, probably roughly the same number of phones. And then, you know, we have IoT, Surface Hub, Halo, HoloLens after that. So, you know, it's probably not completely accurate, but it's somewhere in there. We can look at the net market share data, which Microsoft says is accurate, for what percent of computers out in the world are Windows 10, 23%. 350 million PCs are 23% of what number? 1.55 billion.
Oh, nice.
So
yep.
It actually kind of adds up, you know. It's
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, interesting how very close that was. So maybe that is an accurate thing. And I think that's actually the best news for the PC industry in a way, because I don't think that you go from 1.5 billion to zero quickly. So even if you believe right. that the PC industry is inevitably shrinking and will always shrink, I mean, I don't think it's a, you know, like a straight line, but, you know, let's say it's always going down. You're not going to get rid of that market mm-hmm. quickly. And you guys, I think we were talking about at the end of our work lives. I think we can mm-hmm. safely say that by the time we retire, PCs will still be around. We yep. won't have to worry about it. But I do think these other devices, Chromebook is a great example. Chromebook running Android, Andromeda, if they ever do that. Even Android tablets with keyboards and so forth. iPad Pro, as much as it bothers me to say it, are going to eat away at that market as well, too. So,
I do think it's instead of PCs dominating the landscape, it's yep. just a more heterogeneous landscape. There are yeah. more choices. There are many ways to compute. Computing is everywhere, and you'll yep. choose the tool that works for you. PCs aren't going to go away. They're going to have a smaller market share. And that's, well, but that's done. That's a done deal. That's not going to change.
Yeah, I think so. They're more specialized. You know, yeah. We talked about this. You know, in the old days, you'd mm-hmm. use a PC for everything related to computing tasks. And today we have phones or tablets, and we have ebook readers, and we talk to our Alexa thing, and we've got computerized TV screens that need to boot up now. And there's all this other stuff, you know, and so computers become a smaller and smaller chunk. I mean, yeah. for people like Mary Jo and I write, having something with a keyboard and a sophisticated operating system and good apps is still key. But
you could do it on a Chromebook.
That's the thing. Yeah.
You don't need all that elaborate stuff for what you do.
Sure. I could do it on a Chromebook, Leo, but I'm not going to.
Actually, you couldn't because you use Photoshop and surprisingly, right. Microsoft Paint.
We're not far away from that not being an issue anymore.
No. There's, in fact,
there are online tools that look and work just like
Polar.
Photoshop.
Take a look at Polarr.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a Chrome extension, free right now, although I think it's going to have a pro component, mm-hmm. that is Photoshop.
Yeah.
Mm. It doesn't have layers, but it's but what you for what
no,
you do,
I don't
Paul,
use, I don't
you don't use layers. Layer, for what you yeah. do, Polar would work fine.
Yep. Mm.
Yep. But after our conversation of last week, I've really mm-hmm. come to the conclusion that it's not that one category is disappearing. It's just you're spreading all of those computing dollars over a much larger yeah. variety of devices.
From the perspective of the PC, you know, the PC industry is not like what we call a growth market, right? But there are parts of the PC business that are still very healthy and can grow. You know, premium PCs is a reason Microsoft's in premium PCs. It's where HP and Lenovo and Dell are all competing as well. You know, gaming PCs, anything with higher margins, you know, all of Apple's computers fall into this category.
Frankly, you could argue that a Chromebook is a PC. I mean, it's Linux, and it's just a simple.
It definitely is a PC. Yeah.
So, I mean, really, I think this
it's a PC with an asterisk. Just
right.
To be clear.
Yeah, there's an asterisk.
But
I don't see PCs coming back. I don't think this is a little.
Yes. No. No. We don't hit the bottom and bounce back. Yeah.
No.
Like a blip.
No. Yeah. No. This is the new normal.
Leo, that touch thing was just a little fad over it. Just like Pet Rocks came and went.
Yep.
You know, hula hoops.
Yep.
Frisbees.
Yep.
Done.
PCs are not a fad.
No.
PCs are not a fad.
But if they were a fad, they were a 40-year fad. I mean,
and I'm doing my best to argue that case on the radio show when I'm talking to normal people. I'm saying you have to rethink what was the default for three decades. The default was need a computer, buy a PC. That's what you get.
Yep.
That's what everybody gets. You don't think about it. Just buy a PC. And I think you don't have to think that way anymore. We have to stop that mindset because it's not the perfect fit for everyone. And there are many more choices. It's like saying, you know, you have to buy a Model T. You buy a car, it's got to be black.
You can have any color as long as it's black.
Yeah, right. It's not true anymore, and that's good. Yeah. That's good. Legal Beagle.
Yeah, we could do these quick.
We could do the Irish. So Microsoft won the Irish data center case.
They not did the not Irish want
to, Yeah, not the average. They didn't want to hand over data. So the feds were looking for data, you know, from Microsoft. Microsoft said, well, we can't give you this guy's information. It's on our Irish data center. Fed said, doesn't matter. You're a U.S. company. They went to court. Microsoft won. Not so fast. There's on appeal now? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, they're appealing.
Yeah, that's DOJ wants them to reconsider.
This is actually a tough, you know, people have all these privacy concerns and all that, and I get all that stuff. The problem is this really is a big gray area, and it's something that needs to be formalized, right? Because the ramifications of this case are actually very far reaching. And so I obviously want to see Microsoft win this one, but we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
Is it silly?
Sorry.
For somebody to say, I think it's silly. Oh, I put it on the internet. It should be safe and private.
Yeah.
Is that silly?
Scott McNeely figured this out 20 years ago.
I mean, yeah. I understand why somebody might have thought that, you know, in the naive days.
Well, okay, so not to go down a rabbit hole here, but Microsoft has the capability to arbitrarily move data to different data centers in different locations if they want to. Some cloud vendors don't have that capability. You as a customer do not have the capability to specify, hey, I think I'm going to engage in some illegal activity. Could you please store my data in Ireland? Thanks. You know, and so there's all these kind of weird issues around it. You know, this particular case, a lot of it's not public, but it's believed to be a non-U.S. citizen breaking U.S. laws inside the United States. Created, I don't know if they I can't say that. I'm not sure about that part of it. But you know, there's these kind of gray areas about jurisdiction. And so anyway, it is something that needs to be debated. I don't have all the answers. I don't think anybody does. But I guess we're going to debate it because the DOJ is appealing it, the decision.
I mean, I think you on the one hand, we should have all the protections possible for our email and our OneDrive stuff and all of that. But on the other hand, it's a fool's paradise to think, oh, I put it on the internet and no one could ever see it. Yeah. That's clearly...
I think putting it on the internet is why you want everyone to see it.
Right.
I think isn't that part of the point?
I mean, we've had mail, postal service for a couple hundred years now, since Ben Franklin. Mm-hmm. And we understand that when you put something in an envelope and seal it, it's protected by federal law.
Yep.
That it's, you know, it, that no, the mailman, most of the time...
Somebody should tell my mother this. She still opens my mail that goes to her house.
I mean, how many times you see people steaming open the mail? And how many times you read a story about a mailman who got tired of delivering it, so he just put it in his attic?
Sure.
Nobody has the illusion that if I write something top secret and put it in an envelope and put it in a mailbox, that it's guaranteed secure. Nobody believes that. That's why they use the internet.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can if you're smart. And I presume that anybody who wants to be a bad guy is going to soon learn about encryption.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I mean, again, we could devote an entire 2 hours to this topic. This is so much to it. It's a giant gray area. You know, you can make these little determinations about parts of it, but
I'm just saying that Microsoft shouldn't really have the burden here. Because somebody put something unencrypted on a server.
Hey, Microsoft, you shouldn't let anybody see that. Microsoft has other burdens that are potentially unfair. You know, they get an enormous number of secret requests that have no timeline attached to them. And those numbers just keep going up and up and up. And that's technically illegal, you know, which is one of their arguments. You can't just, it's like keeping people in Guantanamo Bay. There's no real legal basis for doing this. It's just something that happens, you know. So I think these issues need to be resolved in some legal forum like they are being resolved.
These philosophical issues that we discuss in this show and others really is, it's very simple, boils down to pre-internet expectations coming up against the change in society that the technology has brought.
What you've just described is Bill Belichick as Donkey Kong at the top of a construction site hurling surfaces at a millennial who's running up the construction site to get to his girlfriend.
That can be a game. That's good.
Yeah, that's what just went through my head.
And as usual, of course, the people who have, you know, criminal intent will inevitably be the ones who are best at keeping their stuff private, and the rest of us are just screwed.
Yeah. Mm. Hey, when need drives innovation.
Right, I mean, right.
That's how it works.
Right, right. LinkedIn.
Quick update on LinkedIn.
Now, that's happened, hasn't it? Doesn't Microsoft own them now? It's done.
No.
Oh, it's not?
Nope.
Do they need more approvals?
They need one more approval, which is the EU. Ah. They've got U.S., Brazil, and Canada already saying yes to the deal. But now, as of last Friday, the EU actually has the deal on their plate to look at. And they have, I think, up to a month to decide.
So I'm still using LinkedIn, an independent company.
Not Microsoft.
Oh, interesting. Yep. Do you anticipate changes?
So Mark Benioff of Salesforce fame is trying to get the EU to block this deal because he says that Microsoft is going to unfairly withhold the data from other companies that is locked up in LinkedIn. And Microsoft has said they do not intend to do that.
Well, they weren't until he mentioned it. Now I think maybe we're going to take a look at that.
How about Salesforce? Yeah.
So Microsoft, which has CRM products that compete with Salesforce.
They do. Yep.
LinkedIn, I gather, you know, because it is it's your contact list. It's a lot of information that would be valuable in a CRM database.
Right.
So they have some sort of connector with Salesforce.
They do.
And Benioff's concern is that if Microsoft buys it, that might get severed.
Right. And Microsoft has said that's not the plan.
But I bet you that's the kind of thing a regulator might say, it better not be the plan. And we're going to insist it isn't.
Right. Yep. That's the type of, you know, these are how things get approved, right? They go back to Microsoft with, you know, can you ensure us that this will never happen? And they say, of course not. And done.
Right. This is what might happen. Either the EU will approve it and just say, okay, yes, we think Microsoft, you get LinkedIn, all good. Or they can go back to Microsoft and say, you need to make some changes before we approve this, further delaying the deal. Because Microsoft's goal is the deal goes through before the end of this calendar year. Mm. Then they can start combining the LinkedIn assets with their own assets and figuring out strategies going forward with what they want to do with all their graphs and their data and algorithms. But they legally cannot start planning that or doing that work until the deal is approved through all the regulatory bodies.
Do you think Salesforce made the same complaint to U.S. regulators and was not heard?
We didn't hear that they did.
I think that guy's insane, and it just occurred to him.
Yeah, I think he missed it. Mark, you should get better advisors.
The EU typically comes down hard on data and privacy issues, and so he may have said, hey, let me not bother with the U.S. Let me go with the EU.
Hey, Leo.
Yeah.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Just in.
Apple has sent out invites for its October 27th event.
What did I tell you? Today or tomorrow.
You said it.
I like how they wait for Windows Weekly to do that.
Yeah. That was all a plan. They said, Windows Weekly?
I'm going to go through the semi-annual and always futile process.
Let me check my inbox to see if I have an invite.
Checking my inbox, And maybe they sent it to my Outlook.com address. That's probably what happened.
Your old Outlook, not your new Outlook.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
I guess I'm free to go to the Legacy Place Apple store on that day if I'd like to.
Nice.
Well, Microsoft did dodge that bullet. Let me see. Anything from Apple.com? Anything at all? No. Sad to say no.
It's weird.
I got a receipt for all the crap I buy from Apple. Nothing.
I'm looking at one of the Apple invites. It says, hello again.
Hello again.
Yeah. We make Max. Remember Max?
Hello, it's me.
Yeah.
Is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes. You're wondering when there will be a new Macintosh. Let's see. Apple Invite only turns up, of course. Let me see. Let me Apple October Invite. How about that?
One day you're going to be surprised and you're going to be off the blacklist.
I'm not on a blacklist. I don't want to imply that I am on a blacklist of any kind. I think I could probably call them and say I'd like to go.
Oh.
And they would,
why don't
course,
you?
Because I'm busy doing our coverage here.
Oh.
Notice how you can't be on our coverage because you're at the Microsoft event.
Gotcha.
So we, I mean, I like it that many people on our, you know, in our circle go. Renee Ritchie, mm-hmm. I'm sure, will go, and probably Annie Inaka, and all those people go. But I have to stay here. So I don't pursue an invite. I'm sure I could get an invite. I'm sure I. What do you. You seem skeptical. I don't.
I didn't raise this issue.
I'm not skeptical because of you. I'm skeptical because of them.
Well, you know how. But I look at that was years ago.
Mary Jo has a healthy, maybe hatred's the wrong word.
Hatred's disdain the
right word. Really? Apple, you perhaps, don't like so. Apple?
No.
Yeah, hello again. Here's a picture. Hello. Hello again. And it's a Macintosh disappearing poof like
smoke. That's a pale moon, Leo.
Pale moon.
That is weird. Why is the apple dissolved?
It's like it's corroded.
Special invitation only event at the Apple campus in Cupertino, One Infinite Loop. Oh, man, now I do want to go. A cafe breakfast will be available.
Nice.
Hopefully not a continental breakfast.
Oh, it is. It's the worst. I've had it before. It's terrible.
It was in London one time. I asked them which continent this was from. I think it was London.
That's a good line. I'm going to remember that.
That's terrible.
Which continent would that be?
Yep.
MacBook Pros are near certain, but pretty much ever. So we got a busy week next week. We got the Microsoft event. They dodged a bullet. They thought. They predicted.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it on the 26th. That way we can have our own news cycle. You don't want to do it even after, the day after an Apple event, because you don't know. Apple might announce something that everybody's talking about, like an autonomous vehicle.
The Microsoft event the day before is like going to the beach before the day before like a hurricane hits it. It's nice. It's pleasant. It's not that busy.
It is. You know?
You just don't think about the future.
I liken it to the beach in Puerto Escondido, Mexico, in Oaxaca. Okay. A Christmas day, beautiful, calm, amazing, beautiful. A surfer's beach, wonderful breaks. Mm-hmm. And then the day after Christmas, everybody in Mexico City, I mean everybody in Mexico City, gets in a bus and goes to Puerto Escondido.
Oh, jeez.
We didn't know this. We were staying there.
Right.
And it was we were really enjoying it the week before Christmas. Then the day after Christmas, it's like you can't move.
The whole place,
It's like Coney Island on the 4th of July.
Yep.
All right. By the way, big day tomorrow, right? We're going to get Microsoft's earnings. Anything to look for? I'm sorry you won't be here.
Tomorrow, they're going to talk more about cloud, of course, and try not to talk about phone.
Yeah. We could have a Microsoft earnings drinking game where we drink every time they point out a metric that has nothing to do with money.
Right.
Like you know, engagements.
Like, oh, God.
Right.
Active hours.
You know, like our cloud seats grew 157%. From what? Oh, we can't say.
Yep. Yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. All right, let's take a break. Back of the book coming up, right? You got everything out of your system.
Yes.
nothing more to talk about.
Nothing more.
Nothing more to say. Beer. Tips, picks, all of that coming up. We were talking about the intranet earlier and why, you know, you've got to make it something people want to use. And I understand that a little bit because you spend all this money and energy creating a website for your company. And then those dang millennials, they just, I don't want to use that. That's why we talk about Igloo. Igloo's a modern intranet that looks great on mobile. Look at that. On a smartphone. On a tablet, on a laptop. It's designed, work isn't a location anymore, right? It's not where you work. You're working everywhere. Teams can be all over the world. So keeping teams communicating, working together on the same page is a challenge. Igloo is the solution, an intranet you'll actually like, a modern intranet designed to keep everyone on the same page. You, of course, you can share files, you can have real conversations in real time, and you can do it all while using the apps you already use. It works with Skype. It works with Box. It works with Google Drive. It works with everything. Igloo brings together everything in one single destination so you can focus on your work. Of course, it's cloud. You can do it on-prem, but you can also have them host it, share files, collaborate on documents. There's blogs. You have complete granular control of who can do what. Excellent choices of authentication methods. You've got calendaring. You've got project management. And when you add content, you're doing it with drag-and-drop widgets, so you don't need to be an expert or a WYSIWYG editor. I mean, it's really nice. And, of course, in private clouds over SSL with 256-bit encryption. And completely customizable. Works with Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, Google Drive, Zendesk. It's an intranet you'll actually like. And you could try it for free. Actually, what's really cool about it, you can get it free forever for up to 10 people. So if you've got a small work group and you want to try it out, free forever. Set it up, do it, and it's yours. But you have to go through our link, Igloo, I-G-L-O-O, software.com/twit. Igloosoftware.com/twit. And if you want to go, you know, corporate wide, you know, they've got great pricing and you get a free demo if you go to that website. Igloo, I-G-L-O-O, like where the Eskimos live. Igloosoftware.com. An internet you'll actually want to move into. It's awesome. You're listening to Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. It's time for what we call, joshingly, but with a certain amount of truth in it, the back of the book. Always thought that was the cool stuff in the magazines, the computer magazines, where all the fun, interesting stuff was stuck. Paul yep. Thurrott mm-hmm. kicks things off with his tip of the week, and it is fun and interesting.
That's where I read John Dvorak.
Right. He was always the back of the book kind of guy.
He still is. Yeah. Still is.
Really? Well, no, they don't. Do they? They don't print PC
yeah, they
magazine
do. PC
anymore.
Mag. Yep.
They print it?
Well, no, no. I read it on the Kindle.
There's no back
in the
of the
21st
book.
Century. I'm just saying, it's the last column.
The internet has no back of the book. Everything. Actually,
it's formulated like a magazine.
It is though, right? He used to write for Mac User, as he was the anti-editor, right? Because he hated Macs, and it was the last page. So you'd be reading all this nice stuff, then you get to him. It's like nobody wants a mouse.
That was a fairly accurate
nobody wants these things. They're terrible. Nobody wants one of these. All right. What is your tip, Mr. Thurrott?
I know we're short for time. I just want to add two things real quick. Microsoft just contacted me. The webcam issue, remember, in the anniversary update for Windows 10?
Yeah.
Was fixed in the September 29th cumulative update that they put out.
Very nice.
I don't know if we knew that. Mary Jo, have you heard this before? Hmm.
No, I couldn't remember if we had learned when.
I asked you last week, and we speculated that it would be fixed. Yeah.
So it was fixed. I was not aware of this. I was just told that was the case. So it is fixed.
Okay.
The other issue, I just randomly, because I went through this today with trying to get the fast ring build on this computer. I had someone from Microsoft get back to me and say they were going to look into what was the problem. I was getting a Windows Update error trying to go to the fast ring install off of RTM. And I tried every Microsoft Answers troubleshooting guide, whatever, you know, workaround to make this work, and never got it to work. And so I asked about it on Twitter, and someone recommended switching to slow ring, installing whatever build you get from that, and then switching back to fast ring, and it should work, and it did work. So if you run into that problem, it's a lengthy workaround, but it does work. And what do I actually have for tips?
By the way, I just checked John C. Dvorak, of course, still writing in PC Magazine.
Yep.
I kid you not.
His October one is spectacular.
His October articles, Don't Get Scammed by Digital Crooks, Why Google Andromeda Might Be Too Little Too Late, The Massive Windows 10 Update Failure, PC Does What Campaign Isn't About PCs, and Write an Amazon Review, Go to Jail. So
tell me if you think this is accurate, because I have a theory that John Dvorak doesn't actually write anymore. And what they do is they take his articles from like the 1980s and they just change it to modern products.
Even if he writes them, that's probably not far off.
I enjoy reading John Dvorak.
No, John taught me, and he was completely right. that you should treat any development in technology with extreme skepticism, and you wouldn't be far wrong.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
It all is crap, ultimately.
Sure. Yeah, it's almost like Goonie boosterism doesn't usually work out.
Yeah, and I was kind of a Goonie booster. And so he taught me to stop being a Goonie booster.
You can't be a technology enthusiast and not go through this.
I give him a lot of credit for that.
It's in the DNA.
Yep.
I've now forgotten the date. I don't know if it's Friday. I think it's Friday. Not today's date, sorry.
I don't know what day it is.
I was trying to say I think it's on Friday. If not Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Xbox One users will be able to download the Call of Duty Infinite Warfare beta and play online, play multiplayer, which I was doing last weekend on the PS4. Actually, if you have a PS4, you can do it this weekend too. So that's something to look forward to. It's pretty good. It's very much like Black Ops 3 multiplayer. So if you're into that kind of thing, and I am, I think you will enjoy it.
Nice.
There's not too much to say here. It was interesting. Microsoft published something on one of the Xbox blogs about optimizing game DVR performance. I guess in the anniversary update, they made two changes to I think it arrived in the game in the anniversary update, but they made two changes to the game DVR where it can work with certain full screen games, only six of them, and it can run in the background all the time so that at any time it's recording games and then you can go back and grab like a certain portion of it. If you don't have like an epic high-end video card, this is not going to work. And so you actually want to disable both of those features. And I have a post about how to do that. This is two checkboxes and settings. And then Mary Jo, tell me if you heard about this one. Not that I'm trying to make sure you're paying attention to my Xbox stuff or anything.
I was dozing. I'm awake again.
There is a, let's see, let me bring it up here. Someone from Microsoft posted what is essentially a PowerPoint. I'm sorry, I'm completely losing it. A PowerShell script that allows you to go and download the slide decks and videos from Ignite 2016. Mm-hmm. And I ran into this because I was trying to download videos from the show. And I'm going back to the site and I can't find the videos. I thought they were available just kind of normally.
They're there.
Yeah, I couldn't find them. Okay, so this is...
go to Ignite site and then if you go to the session catalog, they're there.
So for the sessions I visited last weekend, they were not there. And I wonder if it's some videos or...
Yeah.
Maybe will this downloader get them anyway? Or
yeah.
Just use this, you'll get them all.
They're technically up on YouTube, right? That's like where they're... they're hosted on YouTube because it's not Channel 9 that did it.
That was weird.
That's interesting. Yeah.
This actually uses the OneDrive URL, so you're getting the... the original.
Yeah, you're going to get a dump. You're going to need like a 1 gigabit connection for this.
All right. I got it.
I thought it was kind of interesting.
I got it. Nice.
And then the App Raise and Mobile app pick of the week is Instagram for Windows 10. This is kind of interesting because there is not a native Instagram client on an iPad or on an Android tablet. Yeah. They only have them on phones.
Yeah, it's weird.
And so if you have a Windows tablet, you can actually get an official app from Instagram, and it's full featured. You can post and do all the kinds of stuff. But if you just have a Windows 10 computer, it's basically like visiting the Instagram website. You don't get all of the functionality. You actually need...
That's what it is. It's just a wrapper, right?
Yeah, it's very strange. This is my indication that I wasn't too impressed. But it's like an Android app. So you need a rear-facing camera and a touch screen to get 100% of the functionality. Like it won't behave normally. In other words, it has to look like a phone, you know.
It's not UWP?
I think it is UWP, actually. Right. It's in the store, so yeah. But they're limiting the functionality. I think Instagram's announcement said Windows 10 for tablets. And Microsoft's announcement said Windows 10's for PCs. Kind of a slightly different message there.
But anything to get Instagram and a little bit better display would be nice.
Yeah.
Good.
That's a step.
Now Mary Jo Foley with the Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yes. So the Enterprise Pick of the Week is about an SAP product that's called SuccessFactors. That's a tough name. SuccessFactors is an employee management service that's used by millions of people around the world. And this week, Microsoft and SAP announced that they are going to do a deal where SuccessFactors will run at least in part on Azure. So the reason this is an interesting thing is, well, there are a few reasons. One is this gives SAP a much bigger capacity to run this service and grow the service because some of it will be running on the Azure cloud. And from the Microsoft perspective, it's interesting because Microsoft seems to be on a tear lately to sign up ISVs to talk about their services being hosted on Azure. Just like the case when they just announced Adobe was going to have some of their services on Azure, this is not an exclusive deal. It doesn't mean that SAP is going to take all of SuccessFactors off of their own servers and run them only on Azure. It's just adding Azure to the mix. But it's still very interesting because it means more and more services that people would call mission critical from third parties are starting to be moved over to Azure, which in some would assume would give customers more confidence in Azure. Hey, if SAP is going to run one of their biggest businesses on Azure, that says something. So my pick of the week is for those people who happen to be using SuccessFactors from SAP, the enterprise customers who are doing that, who may be interested to know that Azure's coming to you, although you won't be choosing it yourself. It'll be underneath your service moving forward.
Nice. And we have a code name.
Yeah, so this is an interesting code name. We talked earlier in the show about Microsoft bringing the Windows holographic shell to Windows 10. We believe this is something that's happening as part of Redstone 2. We believe this will be talked about next week, possibly at the event. And the project to take the holographic shell and put it on Windows 10 Redstone is codenamed Oasis, I heard. So that's kind of an interesting code name, right? Like if you think, what is an oasis? It's like this beautiful spot in a desert, water, plants.
It's better than a mirage.
Better than a mirage.
Maybe the real code name. I don't know.
Some of us need the mirage, Leo.
Although, you know, mirage would have been a kind of a cool code name given the HoloLens and the augmented reality connection. But yeah, well, if you hear about Oasis, if you hear about Oasis, that seems to be the holographic shell coming to Windows 10.
I think this is really exciting. I mean, I know it's a way off, but I love this idea.
It's actually, like, what's crazy is it's not really a way off, right? Like, if they build this into Windows 10 Redstone 2, which is out in March, it means people who have headsets built by third parties, plus the HoloLens, you're going to be able to interact with things on your PC. I mean, you're going to be sitting there wearing a headset looking at your PC, but brings up kind of a lot of potentially interesting scenarios for apps, I think.
Oh, here's an interesting connection. Eric H., MVP in our chat room, says the Oasis comes from Ready Player One.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm.
Not from that British band.
That's interesting. Huh. I'll have to comb back through the book.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Oasis was, and let me look it up.
Yep, so that's code name.
I wouldn't be surprised if the people behind it are fans.
Right? That's the virtual environment, Oasis, all caps. You're right. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, okay, right.
So you go.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah.
That makes
Neil Stephenson's metaverse or whatever.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. Kind of a nice hat tip to Ready Player One.
Yep.
But now, let's raise a glass to everybody.
Let's raise a glass of a pink beer, because that's what this is.
Uh-oh. Paul doesn't seem like much of a pink beer drinker.
No, I'm
I think he would like this. It's from Cascade Brewing in Portland, Oregon. It's called Black Cap Raspberry. So what it is a sour beer. They take a blonde ale and they age it on top of raspberries.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so when you drink it, it definitely tastes like a sour beer, but all raspberry. Too much raspberry.
So there's a little raspberry flavor in it.
A lot of raspberry flavor.
And it's pink.
It's pink. It's like bright neon pink almost.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very good. Another part of this tip is if you ever see anything from Cascade Brewing in Portland, you should just drink it because everything I've ever had from them is fantastic. They make a lot of sours.
Any caveats to that? Any time, place, situation?
Just drink it.
Anytime you see it and can get it, Just try it, especially if you're not afraid of a sour or a wild ale.
I like
ale.
Sours.
Not yep. afraid.
Yeah. You turned me on, Mary Jo, on our New Year's Eve.
Good.
A couple of years ago. I love them now. Well, in fact, I learn everything I know about beer. I learned from Mary Jo Foley.
We all walk in Mary Jo's shadow when it comes to beer.
We do indeed. You'll find her writings. You don't ever write about beer, though, do you?
I do not.
There's got to be a beer magazine or something that you could write.
Oh, there's a million of them. Yeah. Yep.
Just a little something. You'll find her writing all about Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Paul Thurrott stalks us all at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. He haunts my dreams and has marvelous books, many of them, and the most recent are available at leanpub.com. Leanpub.com. And each and every Wednesday, we sit down and we talk about the latest news from Redmond. Right about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Next week, tune in at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern time, 1500 UTC, because we will be talking. We're 1400 UTC, because we will be, Paul will be here, Ed Bott and I, and we'll be talking about what's going on in New York City. Mary Jo will be there. We'll always look for you. So raise your hand or something when there's a crowd shot. Wave your reporter's notebook.
Wave your notepad.
Yeah. and we'll be covering that live. And then Windows Weekly will start an hour later next Wednesday to accommodate, we hope, a chance for Mary Jo to go into the demo room and try whatever it is that Microsoft announced. And we don't know. It is a great mystery. We think we kind of have some ideas, but we really don't know.
We have ideas.
If you can't be here live for that or any of our shows, we put them all on the website. So the Windows event will be streamed, will be uploaded and available for download, within an hour or two of the stream ending. And that's at twit.tv/specials. And this show is always at twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. But all the shows are there. If you click the shows link at the front page, you can see the list of everything. And, of course, you can also subscribe on YouTube, on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, the podcast app on Windows Phone, we're everywhere. Just look for Windows Weekly. But you don't want to miss a minute. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.